Blog Talk Radio.
Time to enter the doghouse, live from the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Maguanago, Wisconsin. Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. I'm your host, the commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and aforementioned Fat Guy with the Phone, Rick Goreski. We're getting everybody back together tonight to talk about the 2016 Mad Dog offseason. As you know, if you've been listening in, we're going team by team and division by division reviewing the 2016 offseason. We've finally shook the blues, and now we're keeping it light with the white, where one of our shows I was looking most forward to is on tap today. I'm referring to Steve Wellman's Stone Form Pallies. Before we can cover the pallies of formed stone, it's time to add the we to me. So let me bring in my co-hosts for today's show. First, let's see if he is here. He is here, so let me go ahead and bring him in. First, he was an investor in the Derek Zoolander Center for Kids Who Can't Read Good. And for the record, he felt all along that the center should have been at least 3 times bigger than it was. Please welcome the owner of the Stone Form Pallies, Steve Wellman. Steve, thanks for coming aboard.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Next up, he was involved in the first trade in Mad Dog history and 14 more since, the owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles. Good to have you with us, Tom. Do you remember the deal?
I see it in the email, so I guess I do.
Why? Well, tipping you off, did you remember it before the email?
No. I don't remember. So, I mean, I remember having one of those guys and wasn't sure that it was the both of them that was a flip, but I guess so.
So basically, for everybody listening, it was the very end of August. So consider it right at the start of September. It was that late in August that we set up our Dynasty League and did a full auction, 40 players. Everybody walked in with $100. October 22nd, so you're just shy of 2 months into the season, and the first trade in the league history, there were two trades processed at the same time. The first trade was myself and Tom. I had given Tom Phil Rivers, Billy Volek, and a 2012 fifth-round pick, and Tom gave me Ben Roethlisberger, Mike Williams, wide receiver of Tampa Bay back then, Cliff Averill, and a 2012 fourth rounder. And was that the trade where you traded for the guy and then there was a buy jam, like as soon as you did it, or was that a different year?
That was a different year.
So a little walk down memory lane.
Sure, it was.
It was a deal I made with Brian Frams. After I made the deal with Frams, I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I think that was a year later, now that I think it all over. But specifically, a little walk down memory lane there. Would it not surprise anybody, hopefully it doesn't surprise anybody, that the first trade ever would have been made by Tom. So, gentlemen, we're here tonight to talk about the 2016 offseason. 6 episodes in now. I'm guessing you know the drill. As quickly as I can, I'm going to recap Stone's moves, including signings, cuts, taxi promotions, draft choices, trades, and then we can talk about how those moves impacted the franchise. So let me click a button here in the background. One of the things that I like to do, I'm not a professional at this, and you're probably laughing because you're like, yeah, I can tell. But we learned from the prior shows that we did that it puts things more into perspective if we go through and set the listeners off by letting them know where the team we're talking about finished last year. We're talking about the 2016 offseason with an eye towards how did they improve. You know, did they get better? What did they do to their team? well, it's good to have the base of where did they finish 2015 and prior to be able to kind of piece things together. So what I do is I go position by position, listing the league average points for that position, and then I tell you where that individual finished within their division, and then in comparison to the league average. So I'll quickly run through that for Stone Form. Stone Form at quarterback, the league average was 394 points. Stone finished a very healthy second in the white division with 408 points. Interesting that he was over the league average and still only second in his division. At Olflex, Olflex average in 2015, 929 points. Stone finished last in the white division with 790 points. Tight end league average was 197. The Pallies finished in the white with the Pallies finished the white with 169 points at tight end, which put them in last place amongst the four teams that they are in the white with. At place kicker, Stone led the white division with 144 points, third highest in the league. League average was 28 points. I'm going to double check that. Yeah, no, that's accurate. 144 points. So he was first in the white division, third highest in the league with that point total at place kicker. Defensive line had Steve finishing fourth in the white division, 254 points on the season. League average was 340. Last but not least, defensive flex, league average was 1,330 points. Stone finished third in the white division with 1,210. And before I say anything, could you guys possibly guess who finished last at D-Flex in the white division? It's Lost in the Sauce. Lost in the Sauce, believe it or not. We'll talk about him eventually here in our series, but I was surprised when I saw that. Lost in the Sauce finished last in D-Flex, so Stone Form finished ahead of him. There you have it. That's Stone's 2015 statistics. Things were in rough shape, which is why the Stone Form Pallies are in full rebuilding mode as they begin a complete teardown of their roster in 2016. Finishing 3-11 last year was kind of a sign of sick irony because 3-11 was the same record Stone finished with 5 years ago in the league's first season. In between, the Pallies finished in last place every year except 2013 when they tied for second place with a franchise-best record of 7-7. Indeed, it was time to tear it down, and here's how Stone Form went about it. The Pallies roster today stands at 45 players, and he has $32.71 in cap room. Plenty of money, and he's still going to cut some guys. Stone Form, as far as signings, re-signed DeMarco Murray to a 2-year deal at $10.42 a year, signed Bell, the wide receiver from Tampa Bay, to a 3-year deal at 55 cents, Conley, the receiver from Kansas City, 3-year deal at 50 cents, Stephon Diggs, Minnesota, 3-year deal, $1.13 a year, the young tight end from Denver, Hoyerman, he was re-signed 3 years, 55 cents a year. Ty, the tight end from the Giants, was on a 3-year deal at 98 cents. That was a sign-and-trade deal to Ipswich United. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Jarrell Freeman, he was re-signed 2 years, linebacker, 2 years, $5.90 a year. Hicks, the linebacker from Philadelphia, was a rookie last year, really looked great before getting injured. Signs him to a 3-year deal at 55 cents a year. Good signing there. Darby from Buffalo, the defensive back. Tom, I think you even tried to claim Darby from him last year, didn't you? Can I stop quickly and ask, Steve, was that a taxi player last year?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so as I recollect, my memory was, just in the moment here, Darby was a taxi player that Steve promoted last year. Tom had tried to claim him. Steve brought him up, and now he signed him to a 3-year deal, $2.16 a year. Darby had finished the 18th best DB in the league last year, so that was nice information from last year and a good signing. Last signing, Jones from Dallas, a defensive back, 3 years, 55 cents. And I actually accidentally included one in my prior listing. There were two early signings for this team where Stone Form exercised their right to sign a guy before the initial contract ended. Both, I believe, were rookies. One was Cameron and Artis Payne, the running back from Carolina, re-signed to a three-year deal, 50 cents a year. And the other was Chris Conley, the wide receiver from Kansas City, also a three-year deal, 50 cents a year. As far as cuts, geez, I don't know the guy's first name, but he's a running back. He was with the Giants. Darkwa is his last name. That guy's out of here. Crowder, wide receiver, Washington, gone. Givens, wide receiver, Baltimore, gone. Justin Hunter, gone from Tennessee. Rishard Matthews, used to be with Miami, now he's with Tennessee, gone. Tight end from San Francisco, Blake Bell. Brait, the tight end from Tampa Bay, is gone. He was cut. And Crick was cut at defensive line, as was Lawrence Guy, I think, from Baltimore. He was cut. And Nate Orchard from Cleveland, a linebacker, was cut. In addition, Brian Hoyer was released. Stoneform took a small cap hit to dump him. And Owen Daniels and defensive lineman Michael Johnson from Cincinnati also released during this offseason. So those were the signings and cuts. Let's go ahead and peek at the draft, because that's where Stoneform made their biggest splash. Stoneform picked up 10 picks, if I'm not mistaken, by quick count. They stockpiled several early picks. They had 1, 2, 3 first-rounders, 1, 2 second-rounders, 3 third-rounders, and then 2 fifths. They took Josh Doctson, wide receiver, with the 4th overall pick. The 9th overall pick, they took Will Fuller, wide receiver from Houston. The 10th overall pick, Darren Lee, linebacker from the Jets. With the 2nd pick in the 2nd round, 14 overall, they took Reggie Ragland, who unfortunately is injured now. The 21st overall pick, that's the 9th pick in the 2nd round, Tyler Boyd from Cincinnati, a wide receiver. The 1st pick in the 3rd round, 25 overall, Malcolm Mitchell, wide receiver from the Patriots, who I heard good news on today. It's only going to be about 4 weeks for that gruesome elbow injury that he had just this week's preseason games. The 33rd overall pick, that's the 9th pick in the 3rd round, linebacker Devondre Campbell of Atlanta. The last pick of the 3rd round, 36 overall, running back Josh Ferguson of Indianapolis. Then the 5th round picks, 49 overall, the 1st pick in the 5th round, Mike Thomas, wide receiver of the Rams. And the last pick of the entire draft, Mr. Irrelevant for Mad Dog, Jarrell Adams, tight end of the New York Giants. That was Stoneform Pally's draft. I believe we're going to peek at the trades before turning it over to you guys. Pardon me. Trades. Stoneform has made 6 trades this offseason, very busy, and some of them blockbusters. The first trade Stoneform made, again, in rebuilding his team, deciding to tear it down and go in a different direction, Stoneform gave up Aaron Rodgers and the 1st pick in the 5th round of the 2016 draft to Crazy 7. In return, they got Kirk Cousins, the Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Jordan, a couple of starting caliber defensive linemen. They got the 10th pick in the 1st round, which ultimately became Lee, the linebacker of the Jets. And they got the 10th pick in the 2nd round. That ultimately became something that was traded in a different deal. Next trade that was made, Stoneform gave Sean Swisham and the top pick in the 2016 draft, a pick that became Ezekiel Elliott, and the 1st pick in the 4th round to Ipswich United. In return, Ipswich United gave up the 2nd overall pick, as well as the 12th pick, and a 9th pick in the 2nd round. That pick did actually become a player. The 9th pick became Tyler Boyd. Looking at the next trade they made with Malicious Minds, Malicious Minds gave up the 4th overall pick and the 9th overall pick, and the 2nd pick in the 2nd round. Stoneform Pally's gave up the 2nd overall pick, the 12th pick, and the 10th pick in the 2nd round. Next trade, Stoneform made a trade with Ipswich United. Ipswich gave their 2017 5th round pick for tight end Will Tye. 2 trades left to cap. Lost in the Sauce and Stoneform Pally's. Lost gave up the 9th pick in the 3rd round and the 12th pick in the 3rd round to move up to 2-8 in this year's draft. And then the next one was Lost in the Sauce giving up the 2 5th round picks, the 1st and last pick in the 5th round for linebacker Jarrell Freeman. So, gentlemen, I am going to move over to you. I'm going to ask Stoneform, Steve, if you could tell us, we're ready to talk about your team and your off season. Could you kick it off by telling us what your goals and your philosophy was heading into this off season?
Well, I think the first thing to do is to shine a light on the broken philosophy that I had used up to this point. I kind of had an idea that instead of getting all spending a lot of money and resources on getting splash players, I wanted to get players that are going to score me a certain amount of points game in and game out. Well, that philosophy after 5 years turned out to be pathetic. And as you were reading off a lot of those statistics about where I stood against the league in my division, it was apparent. I was in the bottom on most of them except for the kicker. Woohoo. And so this year I decided I was going to tear the team down. I was going to try and get as many draft picks as I can. And then I figured with 10 picks, if one or two of them wind up being impact players, and then three or four wind up being good players, and the other five could be anywhere between bench sitters and bye week fillers, I think I've improved my team. I also strategically placed myself to have room to maneuver my roster both with money and slots. I have 45 guys, but I mean, I can pretty much cut anybody I want to and not take too bad of a cap hit. So if I need to go into free agency, or if I can do a trade to bring somebody on with a larger cap number, I'm set. So hopefully this strategy this year will prevail.
Tom, do you have any comments, big picture, about what you saw? You know, what were your initial impressions? We're going to go position by position, but what were your initial impressions of Stone's offseason?
Well, as he said, I did like that he went away from guys that he was looking to get specific points, a specific allotted amount of points from such and such players at each position. I know Gar had talked about something similar to that back in the early phases of this conception of this league. And I just felt that, I can say something. The guy I'm competing against, but you gotta go and try your own theory, see if it works. If it doesn't work, then hunt around, see what other people have been doing. Get everybody's information, just other people's perceptions and how and what they do and what their philosophies were to try and build their squads. If there are teams that are 7-7 and then off, find out how they've been able to keep success going for year in and year out. Just so you can start seeing that change, turning everything around. So I commend him on that decision to, switch it up completely, throw the old technique and style to the wind, and like we've been saying, take a swing from it.
Quick comment here, and I give Steve a pat on the back for this. Steve had the most points scored against him last year. So for all of us, we put our heart and soul into building our teams and working hard to set up our players. It's hard to step back and say, I'm going to tear it all up. I was wrong on some of these things. I'm just going to let go and go into what likely is going to be a year or two rebuilding minimum. He did it. He could have just said, hey, I just had bad luck. I had the most points scored against me. It was fluky. I'll just stick to my guns. I got Aaron Rodgers. I've got good talent. I'm just going to go into this draft and pull out some players and maybe get a guy in free agency, and everything's going to work out this time. And he didn't. And I just thought he engineered a really good strategy with some of the young talent that he picked up, especially in the draft. So why don't we talk about the moves, starting at quarterback. This team went from having Aaron Rodgers last year and Derek Carr and Brian Hoyer. Did you acquire Carr last year? Am I recollecting that correctly? Or did you draft him 2 years ago?
No, I acquired him in a trade with Tron.
Okay, so it was a trade. It was last year, right? You acquired him last year, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a guy that you picked up last year. You had Aaron Rodgers. Now you've got Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr. Which of those two is your starter?
Well, from the onset, I think it's going to be Derek Carr, but only because I haven't seen Kirk Cousins do what he did last year, but that's another nice part of the puzzle I put together. I have two viable options at starter, and so whoever gets hot is who's going to start.
Do you feel you're improved, or because he went from Rodgers, one of the top in the game, that you can't possibly improve and let that go? So it's not
I don't.
But I mean,
no,
we got a curveball there.
Yes. I took a step down this year, but I think for the future I'm set because of what getting rid of Aaron Rodgers came back in dividends. I mean, I got two starting caliber defensive linemen out of it. So I don't, you know, I'm a homer and I'm going to miss rooting for him, but on the side, well, I mean, I always root for him, just not when I'm playing you. but, you know, it's one of those things where I let him go, but what I got back in dividends just outweighs it. So,
Tom, what
I'm okay
do you have to say about the quarterbacks here?
I was going to make the same comment that Steve just finished making. He gave up Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, he gave up $7 plus on his cap to get Kirk Cousins. That's a great savings there. And in the process, he grabs two defensive linemen that are putting up, you know, we got there. We were looking at two defensive linemen guys that are putting up in the 150-plus point range, close to 170s, you know.
177.
That's hard to get defensive linemen. Now he's got these two solid guys that he can put in there at any given time. He's stuck with two defensive tackles. They're not on the same level as an Ndamukong Suh. And you
it's 11
end
point.
With,
Tom, just to share with you, you were asking about that. That's 176 points each of them, and that translates into 11 points a game each. Go ahead.
Right. So I look at it as that's a automatic improve on that spot on his defense. He slid back a couple points maybe with Kirk Cousins, but guys young, nice young wide receiving core, nice young offense. The Derek Carr is quarterback of the future, and he put up, you know, 350 points last year, and he's got him on a 2 years for $4.50. I mean, you can't beat that. That's a nice 1-2 punch right there. And they're both young. They're both on offenses that are on the upside. So I love the trade. The trade that he made with you, it's hard to get rid of Aaron Rodgers, and, you know, MVP every year candidate, but what he got in the long term in it, I see those two defense guys are going to be impactful from this year.
I think he definitely took a step down at quarterback. I mean, you go away from an MVP-caliber quarterback, but keep it in perspective. When you're starting with the MVP quarterback, almost anything is a step down. He'll definitely be within reach of the league average. He'll be okay here. And like we're going to talk about later, he improved other areas of the team. So let's talk about the old flex. Steve, what was your strategy with offensive flex? Because you took a lot of young players, wide receivers specifically. Your team's loaded at wide receiver now. Tell us what your strategy was at Old Flex.
It's called the spaghetti strategy. Throw it against the wall. If it sticks, you did good.
Now, this was your most challenging position from last year. You only scored 790 total Old Flex points in your starting lineup. League average was 929, so you were almost 150 points shy of the league average. What can you point to as improvement? Last year you were trotting out, you had Lacy, Murray, you had Brandon Marshall, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Brandon Marshall. At the beginning of the year you felt good about Davante Adams, given the injury situation. You had to be feeling like he was going to have a shot to step up, and you had some other good players, Allen Hurns being one of them. How do you feel today? Do you feel improved, or is this another area where you feel down the road, you know, you took that one step back to take two steps forward?
Well, I don't know that I took one step back, because I think, you know, I mean, I kept the nucleus, and I still have Lacy, and I still have Murray, and I still have Hurns. So I don't think that I necessarily took a step back. I think what I did is I set myself up going forward, a real good solid base. I believe I have somewhere in a neighborhood of 16 offensive flex, and seven of them are rookies. So, I mean, some of those guys have got to hit, right? So I'm hoping that those guys will hit, that the second-year players like Bell and Conley, the younger players like Diggs and Adams, they start to step up their game, and I'll have a really good solid base there. I mean, there's, you know, and I have room to move. I mean, I've got guys like Brandon LaFell and Kenny Britt that I can just dispose of without a second thought. So if I feel like during the year or during free agency I need to put something in there, I can improve there. But for right now, I don't think I took a step forward, but I don't think I took a step back.
Tom, what do you think about Stone's offensive flex?
I think it's an improvement because there's no more the Chip Kelly effect going on DeMarco Murray. So I think without that being there handcuffing him and him being in a system, that he's going to be like the main runner of the team, and you're going to have splashes of Derrick Henry in there. I think DeMarco Murray could return to form like he did back in the day in Dallas. I see possibly 120 to 100 more points on that spot alone just with Murray. And you never can tell what's going to happen with Eddie Lacy. I mean, he's there. He's not there with the weight. But if he's back to form and the offense is clicking like they were beforehand, there's no reason to think he can't put up another 80 more points on top of the 120 he put last year. So you're looking at 200 right there. Add another 100 with Murray. There's, you know, you're looking at 200+ there. And then, like you said, he's got a nice young nucleus in the receiver corps. And once those guys all click, I mean, you got Allen Hurns there. Diggs is on point to make that next step already. Maybe be that 1 year before the 3 year impact. And I'm waiting to see what Conley does. I actually think that guy, if he gets the right situation scenario, I think he could be a nice blow up there.
Word is he came in great shape and is flashing, you know, some really good skills, more than some people thought that he could. But specifically on Oflex, my comments, I think that I struggle, you know, mentally with trying to paint this as an improvement because my brain keeps going back to at some point last year he traded Marshall to Dream Team. And
he was already,
that was a big piece.
At that point he was out of the playoffs, and I know he was trying to get whatever somebody was willing to throw at him. And
I'm just saying that
that's
where he was last year, though. He had that piece, and he still, right, you know, for most of the season, and finished with only 790 points in offensive flex last in his division. And now this year, Lacy and Murray, and I think he can get, those are viable starters, he can get better points out of that. You toss in Allen Hurns, and hopefully that, you know, Jacksonville won't have as much catch-up to play this year if things pan out the way it should, but he'll still get his points. He'll still be a viable starting candidate. I think you're going to have to hope that you can get one really steady starter out of the rest of those guys. One of these young guys that you picked up can step up and find an immediate role, or you're going to have to pick the right matchup every week, or, you know, the off season's not over. Maybe you pick up a guy. I guess I should leave that door open.
I'm looking back at right around the time frame when Brandon Marshall was dealt, and he didn't have dramatic numbers at that point. After the trade happened, the guy put up 30+ points and 20s and 30s pretty much weekly when the trade actually happened. So most of the points for Brandon Marshall came actually after the trading point.
He was, you know, I don't think you're suggesting he wasn't good during the prior games.
No,
it's just that he had better games.
He was decent, but I mean, you had
He was attractive enough to trade, and I already knew that this season it was going to have to be a teardown season, so I wanted to get something in return before he became, you know, for lack of a better word, too attractive to let go.
A tag or release, you know?
Yeah, for me, I'm going to call it a push. A push with higher potential for the future, definitely. Tight end position, let's just take a peek there. Eifert, when healthy, is the clear starter. Love the Hoyerman as kind of a stash, a young stash. You did make a trade out of this depth. You drafted a guy. What were you thinking at tight end?
Well, this was a position that was pretty much didn't have to maintain very well. Like you said, I have Eifert. I knew Harmon was going to be a good player. I'm looking to see what the battle between Donnell and Adams is. And, you know, strangely enough, Michael Rivera is a decent tight end for, if you need him for 1 week, he'll get you somewhere between 5 and 10 points. So I thought I actually improved my position here by holding Eifert, sorry, Tom, and then dealing Ty, who I think is the odd man out in that New York Giant battle.
Tom, do you have some comments on the tight end situation?
As he just alluded to, me and him have been discussions about Eifert, but it's not going to happen. I know he's a little dinged, but I do see him getting in there, and he's option 1B to A.J. Green's 1A. So those are the main two guys other than Giovanni Bernard on that team for catches out of the backfield or just catches in general. I like that Huerman's still there. I think he'll get a shot once I believe his name's what? Virgil Green is the guy that they're going to run out there right now in Denver first. See what happens there.
Right.
As we've said in the past on the draft recap, I do love Jarrell Adams. So hopefully,
I am at tight end position feeling like this is kind of the same as last year, which is not, you know, horrible. It's Eifert is, you know, as soon as he's healthy, he's going to be good. And I think Hoyerman, the growth, the ability for him to get into the lineup and get some catches, I think that's real. That was a guy I was watching last year as a young player tucked away, kind of a dynasty stash, I'll call it. And then he picks up a dynasty stash in Jarrell Adams. So even though you traded Will Ty, you replaced Will Ty with a Jarrell Adams and a Hoyerman. So I think tight end is a push, if not slightly better. Anybody want to talk about the kicker, or should we move on? I'll make one comment, just for the comment's sake. You finished with, I think, 144 kicker points, which was fantastic. Josh Brown, 136 points. And let me make sure that these are the kickers. Yeah, these are the same kickers you had last year. Josh Brown, 136 points. Cairo Santos, 131. So you had to just pick the right kicker each week. So I guess you should do a segment on starting kickers during the season, Steve. Because your overall season points superseded both guys' overall points. Moving to defensive line,
magic.
This is where – go ahead.
No, I was going to say magic. It's all illusions. Done with mirrors.
Move on to the defensive line. Yeah, defensive line is where I think you improved clear-cut the most. You did have Ninkovich last year, but as I kind of randomly popped through some of your lineups from last year and looked at what you were getting from that position, you definitely weren't hitting on both cylinders. You'd get some points from Ninkovich here and there, but otherwise it was weak. Now you've got choices. Now you've got Cameron Jordan, who I've had since the auction. He's great. He's coming into, I think, his prime, his best years are right now. And Ndamukong Suh and Miami, that's a good position to be in. And then you got a couple of young guys to back it up. So definitely improvement. What was your thought on the defensive line position? What was your, you know, tell us about what was going through your mind as you made these moves.
Well, I mean, obviously I wanted to get value for Aaron Rodgers. So when we talked about the trade, I looked at the and you kind of said that they're out there available, and I said to myself that these are the kind of guys that if I can get a couple of set it and forget it guys, I think I'll be okay. And then here's a little quiz for you guys. I have 45 players, so these are going to have to cut. Who do you think are some of the guys I'm going to cut?
Two defensive line, man.
Yeah, the two defensive tackles. I might keep Hankins because he's proven in the past. He was hurt last year. He's proven in the past to do pretty well. But, yeah, Claiborne is just he's outstayed his welcome. And, McDonald, I'm sorry. Clint McDonald's outstayed his welcome, and he's going to hit the floor. And there's one or two guys in free agency that might be worthy of picking up and using for a bye week replacement.
Tom, care to comment on the defensive line situation?
As I just chimed in, a couple guys to be able to probably drop if need be. I'm sure he can pick up a couple guys either with the money he's got on free agent draft or else wait a couple weeks in the season, kind of pinpoint a guy or two that you see is kind of like trending on that either even keel or actually starting to ascend a bit. Get him for a 50-cent draw for a bye week pickup guy. And, yeah, I think the defensive line was improved dramatically, especially with that trade. I think he's got two guys that he can start, kick back and relax until week five when he's just going to plug in a different guy for one game.
Let's move over to the defensive flex situation. Steve, could you talk to us about your defensive flex and how you went about building this during this offseason? Some draft choices, if I'm not mistaken, at least one acquisition. What do you got?
Well, I guess it was a situation where I knew I had Jordan Hicks coming off of injured reserve, so I thought he was going to be able to do good. And then seeing Danny Trevathan and Freeman come over to Chicago, I didn't want both of them, so I knew I could have the opportunity to deal either one of those guys. My defensive backfield, I think Byron Jones is going to step it up this year. I think McDougal is going to step it up this year. Morgan Burnett's always been solid for me. He had kind of an off year last year, but I think he missed a few games. So I would say I gave myself a little bit of a slight improvement, but this is still definitely an area that's going to need to improve, and I think that's probably the area that I'm going to focus on most next year during this whole rebuilding process.
Just looking at the shows we've done thus far, it seems like everybody needs a little help on defense thus far. But, Tom, do you have some comments about the D-flex position for Stone Form?
I think with the position possible switch with Burnett, they're talking about possibly putting him into that Buchanan, Mark Barron type of defensive linebacker, hybrid defensive safety guy. With the possibility of that, I can see him, with him being healthy, I can see the numbers going up again. He missed quite a few games early last year with the injury. I like the change of scenery for Tayshaun Gibson, especially being down there in Jacksonville. It's going to be him and Cyprian down there having a 1-2 punch. Jones is just in his, second year for Dallas, I think it is, and all signs point to him having a good year, possibly being moved into that hybrid actually spot too. Jury's out on the linebacking core. I mean, you do have Trevathan going back to work with his old coach, John Fox in Chicago. I want to see what the rookie Lee is going to do. Hopefully he'll do fine up there. I like Devondre Campbell. Want to see something on him. I think he's going to be a plug-and-play right-away starter. I think Hicks has got a lot of potential for some serious upside there, especially in that defensive scheme that just switched over.
I think that despite the troubles that you've had, Steve, that your defense has always been solid. You've always had good players. And I look at these guys, and you can win with these guys on defense. I think it's an improvement over where you were. You were only 100 points off the league average. Bradham's a starter for Philadelphia. Hicks is fantastic. It is both guys from the same team, but, hey, you know, you need to trot six D-flex out there. You can do worse than Nigel Bradham, I think. We'll see how that plays out. And, you know, new coaching staff in town, new defense, see how that shakes out. But for starters, for everybody, Nigel Bradham is a starting linebacker, so that is a viable piece to have in there. Love Campbell, not sure if he's going to get in right away, but before the season's over, I think he will. Jordan Hicks was looking like a future star last year, so that should be fantastic for you. Darren Lee, again, should make the lineup before the year is over. Keenan Robinson, I think, is a very good player who's going to start this year in the middle. Danny Trevathan's going to get time. You've got players here. Morgan Burnett is another guy that you've got. T.J. McDonald with the Rams. There are some very good players. Ronald Darby, we didn't even mention. You're going to definitely be able to improve over last year with this crew. So, with that we covered all the positions. Let's talk about your starting lineup. We have just about 5 minutes left total in the show. Steve, what would your starting lineup be today if you had to set it? And I think you did.
Well, my yeah.
On the website, you're the only guy with a set starting lineup.
No, that would be me. I did that today.
Let me go in there. Actually, Steve's lineup is here. I can read this, Steve, and you can just take it from here. Derek Carr, Eddie Lacy, DeMarco Murray, Stephen Diggs, Stephon Diggs, Alan Hearns, Jeff Hoyerman, Josh Brown. You got Sue and Cameron Jordan at defensive line. Hicks, Darren Lee, Trevathan, Ronald Darby, Morgan Burnett, and Bradley McDougald are the starters as it stands today. Is that change any of that, Steve?
Oh, it definitely can change. We'll see what happens, if Eifert comes back or not. Obviously, the offensive flex is definitely a little bit up for grabs. I think Hearns, Murray, and Lacy are solid, but we'll see what happens with the rest of those guys. Defensive line, obviously. And then the O-flex, I think Burnett and Darby are going to be starters, and so is Hicks and Trevathan, and then we'll just see through the preseason where the other two spots come out from.
Tom, who would your starting lineup be if you were Steve?
Carr, Lacy, Murray. It'd probably be Alan Hearns and Diggs, or Alan Hearns and Conley, one of the two combinations. Pfeiffer's there, he's starting. If not, I guess you're going. I'm going to go with Michael Rivera on that one. I'm going to come out with
really?
Josh Brown. Yeah, I'm going to go Josh Brown, hit the two guys that he got off you for defensive tackle and defensive end. I think on this defense, I'd probably go Burnett, Gibson, Byron Jones, and then I'd probably take Hicks, Darren Lee, and Trevathan.
I'm not that far off what's already been said, so for the sake of time, we have a couple minutes left. I want to move to the next topic. I'll skip my comments. Can this team compete for the White Division this year? Steve, I'll even start with you.
Yeah, I think it'll be a heartbreaker to some of the teams in the division. I still don't know if it's up there with loss in the sauce. And, you know, Bill's team, for whatever reason, year in, year out, is a sneaky team. It gets its wins when it needs it. So I think I'll be battling with him for second place. But for right now, I think Lost in the Sauce is still the clear winner. But I feel like I can make a definite improvement this year, a definite push this year.
Tom, can this team compete for the White Division?
I believe he can compete. I think he's going to be pushing second place. Definitely with a shot to make some possible upsets in there. Could make them scare number one, actually.
I think that it's going to have a lot of trouble competing. I think it's going to be competing for third place in that division when all is said and done. With anything can happen, truly, especially if some of these young guys catch fire. If that's the case, then all bets are off, and it can go. I think in future years it's certainly set up to do it. But this year, I think this is a rebuilding year. I don't think you're going to see this team vying for first place, more fighting for third. On a five-point scale, we have just about a minute or so left. Tom, five-point scale, what do you give Stone's off-season move?
With everything he's done so far this year, I give him between a 4 and 4.5 right now. The possibility of clearing the charts at a 5 if he pulls off what I think could be happening this year.
4 for me, that's where my brain settled. Steve, what are you giving it?
Yeah, a 4. A 4 with a very, very good possibility for the future, so I'm okay with it.
A 4 it is. 4. You just said that because you're a big on golf. Well, guys, that's going to do it. Time flies when you're having fun. Also, when you're
did
on
we
the
actually
Mad
get
Dog Dynasty
ahead
League
of time?
Podcast, we did it. We knew where we were going, and we took it there. Remember, everybody, remember to look for our upcoming shows in this 2016 off-season moves team-by-team breakdown series. Let me start cutting in a little bit of music here before we lose the goodbye. Next show, we'll showcase the champ, as I like to call him, downhill from here. Until next time, I'd like to thank Tom Buckles and Steve Wellman for joining me tonight. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. This has been another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Time to split with the Meat Puppets playing in the background. Take care, everybody.
Peace.